From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Yesterday, GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump dropped a bombshell. He called for all Muslims to be banned from coming into America. Trump has long been the front runner in the GOP primary campaign. Republican rivals condemned him yesterday in different degrees, but the crowd cheered. So what is going on within the GOP in this wild primary season? This hour on Point 2016, the GOP and the Trump bombshell. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What is unfolding right now in the Republican Party, in the Trump campaign and beyond? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. A special welcome today to our newest listeners in the U.S. Virgin Islands on WTJX 93.1. We look forward to hearing from you. And as always, a shout out to all of our listeners who don't listen live but listen round the clock by podcast and around the country on stations and respond so fully online. We hear you. McKay Coppins joins us in a moment. His book is The Wilderness, where the Republican Party has been, he says. He's stuck in a taxi cab on the streets of New York, but we'll have him in a moment. With us right now from New York and Time Magazine is Zeke Miller. Zeke, thanks very much for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
Zeke, take a little audio tour with us, and then I want to hear from you how politicians are responding to Donald Trump yesterday. Here he was last night, campaign event, South Carolina, reading from his own press statement that he had released earlier in the day.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on.
Hear the cheers, and oh boy, is this bouncing everywhere. Dick Cheney, this is against everything we stand for. Council on American-Islamic Relations, Executive Director Nihad Awad responding here to Trump's call to ban Muslims.
His ideas are not just unconstitutional, they are un-American. This rhetoric echoes the policies enacted by Nazi Germany against the Jews. Have we learned anything from history, Mr. Trump?
You think it's just Nihad? No, it is not. Here's Lindsey Graham, South Carolina senator, on CNN this morning, condemning Donald Trump.
He's a race-baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot. He doesn't represent my party. He doesn't represent the values that the men and women who wear the uniform are fighting for. He's putting our soldiers and diplomats at risk. He's empowering the enemy. And this ban, if it's actually enacted, would take people who have been interpreters, who came to our side in Iraq and Afghanistan, who are under siege in their own countries, and basically becomes a death sentence for them.
Republican, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. Zeke Miller, you're there in New York with Time Magazine. Can you run us through the range of reactions today to Donald Trump's call for a ban on Muslims, including Muslim Americans outside the country, on coming in?
Yeah, there's been a widespread but not complete condemnation within the Republican Party among the folks running for president, Jeb Bush, Lindsey Graham, as we just heard, John Kasich, Marco
Rubio. Give us a sense of what each of these has said. Jeb Bush, unhinged, was one of the words I saw tweeted, I guess?
Yeah, Jeb Bush said called this unhinged and then put sort of quotes around policy saying, you know, this isn't serious. Carly Fiorina, this is, you know, as dangerous as President Obama. Mark Rubio, he disagrees with it and calls it offensive and outlandish. John Kasich called it, Lindsey Graham called it downright dangerous, and Kasich called it an outrageous divisiveness that characterizes every breath that Donald Trump makes. And that's sort of the range of what we've seen. Chris Christie called it a ridiculous position that won't even be productive. But there were others that were silent. Ted Cruz, who has made it a habit throughout this entire cycle of really trying to not alienate Donald Trump or Donald Trump supporters because he wants them to win in Iowa, basically said, "I don't agree with the proposal and nothing else." So that's not what his plan does. But his plan has similar elements. And so did Senator Rand Paul, who introduced legislation in Congress just last week, which would enact a temporary visa ban for 30-some-odd countries, including most of the majority Muslim countries on the planet.
A temporary visa ban, meaning that the visa could not be issued to those people.
Exactly, and that goes beyond the refugee ban, the sort of the temporary refugee stoppage that Cruz and both and Paul both support. So it would what the bill would do is sort of pit a pool of countries in this high risk pool, mm-hmm. would stop visas from being issued to them. So no visitors from those countries, no students from those countries, no business travelers from those countries until. Sort of a range of safeguards were verified by the Department of Homeland Security and other government agencies, and sort of that is an onerous, sort of a fairly onerous bit of paper, sort of paperwork that he was looking for.
That would be could be fairly draconian in itself. Donald Trump not slowing down over any subtleties there, and this range of responses from kind of mild to really severe. Here was Ted Cruz in South Carolina also yesterday, carefully parsing this, saying Trump's plan was not his.
That is not my policy. I've introduced legislation in the Senate that would put in place a three-year moratorium on refugees coming from countries where ISIS or Al-Qaeda control a substantial amount of territory.
But boy, oh boy, the language got much hotter than that. Here was a Democrat, former governor of Maryland, Democratic presidential candidate Martin O'Malley.
I think Donald Trump's comments are some outrageous fascist demagoguery, and I think it plays right into the hands of ISIL. Look, as the president said last night, we cannot allow our values to become the first casualty of this new threat of terror.
Dick Cheney saying, well, I think this whole notion that somehow we need to say no more Muslims and just ban a whole religion goes against everything we stand for and believe in. That's Dick Cheney talking about Donald Trump. Zeke Miller is with us with Time Magazine out of New York. Zeke, you've got Jim Gilmore, Republican, former Virginia governor, saying Trump's fascist talk drives all minorities from GOP. Remind us who Jim Gilmore is. He's also in the race, though, way on the outskirts, right?
Yeah, he's sort of way on the outside. Sort of, if there are 13 major candidates, he's number 14. Former governor of Virginia, hasn't really made many of the debate stages. But that's sort of emblematic of what we're seeing from most of the mainstream of the Republican Party. The party establishment, the Republican National Committee, announced last night that Donald Trump will not be attending a scheduled fundraiser in New York on Wednesday. That was one that they had touted a couple of months ago as a sign of party unity, that Donald Trump is not going to run the third party bid. He'll attend a fundraiser for the Republican National Committee. And now they're saying, well, not so fast. He won't be there. No presidential candidates will be there. And now Speaker of the House Paul Ryan breaking with his fairly consistent tradition this cycle of not commenting on the 2016 race, condemning Donald Trump's comments as not what the party stands for, not what the country stands for. Some fairly harsh rhetoric from sort of the party establishment folks, but that's really not where the Donald Trump voters are coming from. But that's an indication of where the rest of the Republican Party is.
Trump warning this morning on CNN, you know, take big measures, or another 9/11 was sort of the implication.
Because you're going to have many more World Trade Centers if you don't solve it. Many, many more, and probably beyond the World Trade Center.
Zeke Miller with Time Magazine. This is not the first time when we saw Donald Trump's poll numbers dip that he's come out really swinging with new language. And that was the case this week, right? In Iowa, at least in one poll, he dipped below Ted Cruz.
Exactly. On Monday morning, Monday afternoon, a Monmouth poll came out from Monmouth Polling University in New Jersey, saying that Ted Cruz is up at 26%, 23%, and Trump was behind him. So the first time that Ted Cruz had established a real far and away lead, that came, moments, that came, 4 hours before Donald Trump put the statement out. Maybe a couple of minutes before that poll, the statement came out from Donald Trump. It's not clear he even saw that poll. Was a CNN poll that showed him sort of maintaining a strong lead in Iowa, sort of showed just the opposite effect. But it does seem that there's a pattern with Donald Trump through this entire cycle. A bad poll comes out. He says something outlandish. There's a reaction from the media, from Democrats, from mainstream Republicans against him. His support consolidates. His numbers jump back up. And then he spends the next 2 or 3 days saying, oh, that thing I just said, oh, it's not as bad as you thought it is. But it's still pretty bad, but it's still pretty harsh and not politically correct. And then he sees his support consolidate. Is a distinct pattern. He has it down almost to a science at this point.
And of course, in almost every speech that Donald Trump gives, he begins with bragging about his poll numbers, which have been consistently very high, right up around a quarter of those responding among Republican voters. Now, the one on Monday put Ted Cruz at 24%. In Iowa, Donald Trump at 19%, Marco Rubio at 17%. Another poll still had him with a pretty comfortable lead, CNN OCR poll. But, you know, in the past, this has worked for him. What are you hearing from people in the political world? This is such an unusual season. But is this time? Has he jumped the shark? Is this the bridge too far, Zeke?
You know, we've written that story, you know, in the press. We've all said, oh, it's the bridge too far. And almost every single one of these statements, you know, first going back when the day he announced his candidacy, when he implied that most Mexican immigrants to the United States were rapists, to when he criticized John McCain's war record, to when he said, you know, he criticized Bo Bergdahl, saying he should have been shot rather than traded back from the Taliban. You know, all of these things are sort of just, you know, outrageous rhetoric. Has only helped him with his base, and the you know what's not clear is that, you know, if there's not that response, is, you know, is the Trump support because of the rhetoric, or is it because of the condemnation? And it's not really clear from the polling. There's a large segment of the Republican primary electorate, 20%, 35%, somewhere in that range, that is just so fed up with the process, they just want somebody who is willing to sort of light it all on fire, and that's what Donald Trump does. He offers them that opportunity to say all the conventional rules of politics, of political correctness, of you know, what it means to be in public life. He's going to throw that all out the window, and they eat that up. But what they're seeing, what they're responding to, often seems to be the controversy around Donald Trump, not necessarily his specific policy proposals, which, you know, are often way off the mainstream, and, you know, many, and often don't benefit the people he's speaking to.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Republican Party's wild campaign season and the Trump bombshell. He says he would bar Muslims from entering America. You can join us this hour. What do you make of Trump's statement on Muslims and entry to this country? What do you make of the phalanx of Republican contenders now condemning him? Republicans, we really want to hear from you. What is the dynamic in play in your party this campaign season? Have you ever seen a wilder GOP campaign? The statement out yesterday, and we heard him earlier read it out loud to a cheering crowd in South Carolina. Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on. Donald Trump there. And he was still at it this morning. No apologies. He was saying it's got to be done. Got to be done. Here he was on CNN.
We have people out there that want to do great. They want our buildings to come down. They want our cities to be crushed. They are living within our country, and many of them want to come from outside of our country. I am saying that until we figure this out, we should have a ban. It's very simple.
Lots of Republicans criticizing Donald Trump today. Ari Fleischer, the former press secretary for George W. Bush, says so far every boundary he has pushed has worked out for him. This is Ari Fleischer, Republican. I hope GOP voters recognize this time he's gone too far. Even before yesterday, you had Jim Gilmore, GOP presidential candidate, out there, you know, no big numbers, but he's in there, former Republican governor of Virginia, former chair of the Republican National Committee. November called out Donald Trump for his ideas on registering Muslims, deporting millions, calling immigrants criminals, and more. Here was Jim Gilmore.
I just don't agree with that kind of thing. I said it's fascist talk. So, and, you know, frankly, they go back to Trump and they say, well, are you going to register people in this country? You know, he's all over the map. But this is not a serious candidate for president. I don't care what he's showing in the polls.
Republican former chair of the Republican National Committee calling it fascist talk. You've got House Speaker Paul Ryan strongly condemning it today. Paul Ryan, Republican Speaker of the House, saying what was proposed yesterday is not what this party stands for. And more importantly, it's not what this country stands for. They're Republican Paul Ryan. Zeke Miller with Time Magazine is with us in New York. With us as well right now, from New York, is Federico Finkelstein. He's professor of history, department chair, New School for Social Research. He studies fascism. And while the word is out there and being thrown around today by Republicans and Democrats, maybe thrown around is the wrong word here. It's just being applied. We heard the former chairman of the Republican National Committee using it right there. Federico Finkelstein's book is Transatlantic Fascism. Professor Finkelstein, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So you've studied all of this history, Mussolini and Hitler and all the rest, and these names are being brought up now around Donald Trump. You hear the speeches he's making, what the perspective that he's bringing. As an historian, How do you look at this? Is it fair to say, here comes a fascist?
Well, I mean, at least it's fair to say that he sounds like one. So basically, one of the questions that you ask, which is a really important question, is when in history we saw this? Well, in history books and in books about fascism. Now, the question is whether, although Donald Trump is, sounds like a fascist, whether he is a fascist. And I think he is bridging the gap between what he is, which is a radical extremist, candidate, and what fascism stood for. And yet, there are important differences.
You've said he doesn't really yet fit the definition of a fascist. I can't believe we're even having this conversation, but
yes.
Here we are, Republicans and Democrats using the word. Why would he not fit that definition?
Well, I mean, basically, there is a long road between, xenophobia and racism in politics. He's already there. And then what fascism stood for. That's how fascism started, right? I mean, with, a display of xenophobia and racism as important political elements in their campaigns. Now, once they became, once they reach power, they establish a dictatorship. They switch from racist statements to eventually the physical elimination of the other. So he's not there yet, and basically that means that he's not a fascist.
So physical elimination of the other is required to fit the full definition in your mind?
Well, I will say that, I mean, that is an important distinction, that fascism not only talk about the enemy, but also eliminated it from the political. As you know, fascism started by banning people that they didn't like from the political process. Now, the question is, fascism is anti-democratic. Fascism stands for dictatorship. Now, the question that we should ask is how democratic it is to present people either as citizens, because first Mr. Trump asked for the registration of Muslim citizens, and then as visitors, not to be part of a country or not to enter a country because they are religious identity. And that certainly, I will say, is not democratic.
Wow. Zeke Miller, where do you see this going? As you say, every time so far, he's seen his numbers jump and then consolidated them and rolled on. But the pushback has never been as widespread and deep in his own party as it is today. Do you sense something different here, Zeke, or with Donald Trump, you just don't know?
It really is too soon to tell. We're going to have to see what happens with the poll numbers, and also how far does Donald Trump want to take this? In the past, he's qualified these sorts of statements and backed down just a little bit. We saw even a little bit of that Tuesday morning when he was on doing some round of TV when he's saying, oh, this is only a temporary measure, not a permanent measure, and sort of making that explicit, saying, he would allow foreign heads of state to enter the United States, trying to sort of caveat out his explicit ban yesterday. But what the result of that is that this controversy that we've seen, this condemnation, this widespread condemnation from almost all corners of the Republican Party, will help him solidify that support with a small, with a small plurality right now over the Republican primary electorate, and until the rest of the field consolidates, until somebody else has, until there are fewer than 12 candidates, 13, 14 candidates in this race, somebody else who can amalgamate a support of 25-30% to beat Trump, he's still going to be the front runner in this race. That doesn't mean he's going to win. We've seen his ceiling. We've seen his ceiling at 30-33%, 35%. It's not going to get higher than that. But until somebody else can beat that, and that requires the field to really consolidate, Donald Trump will still be where he is.
And of course, in the primaries, a plurality is all a candidate, a front runner, needs to win. Zeke Miller, political reporter with Time Magazine. You're terrific to be with us today, and we appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on, Zeke.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And Federico Finkelstein, author of Transatlantic Fascism at the New School for Social Research. Professor Finkelstein, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
With us now from New York, McKay Coppins, senior political reporter for BuzzFeed. He's been all over the Republican world in this wild campaign season. He's out with a big new book, The Wilderness. Deep inside the Republican Party's combative, contentious, chaotic quest to take back the White House. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. McKay Coppins, welcome back to On Point. Your title sounds just right today.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my gosh. Combative, contentious, chaotic. Sounds like New York's traffic. I'm glad you made it through.
I'm glad I made it through, too. It was quite a journey through the wilderness to get here.
Okay, here you are. You've been following this all the way back to 2012 when a new crowd of aspirants for the White House saw Mitt Romney go down on a moderate platform and said, hey, this is our time. How do we get from there to now, December 8th, 2015, Donald Trump being called a fascist by people in his own party and still out front as the Republican frontrunner?
It really is, I think, a once-in-a-generation, almost unprecedented moment in political history, certainly in the history of the Republican Party. I mean, I covered the Romney campaign in 2012, and I was in the ballroom in Boston that night on election night when, despite all the best hopes and wishful thinking of Republicans, Mitt Romney and a lot of other Republicans across the country went down. And it's funny, at one moment during that night, a Romney advisor kind of wandered over to me in sort of a haze and said, if this ticket can't win against this president, I don't know if Republicans can ever win the White House again. And that kind of set off this the idea for this book, which was to tell the story of the Republican Party's search for redemption, basically, through the kind of rising cast of new Republican stars. And so my book, my narrative opens on that election night, going through, you know, from Jeb Bush to Marco Rubio to Donald Trump to Ted Cruz, where they were that night, how they were processing Romney's defeat, and kind of how a lot of them, frankly, while publicly saying, you know, this is such a travesty, it's so sad that Mitt Romney lost, candidly, they all kind of saw this as their moment to rise and take over the party and rebuild it and remake it in their image. And so this book kind of tells that story as these various kind of combatants war over the future of the party.
I hope we get to go back through some of that. But the news today is just so big. So you've got to zoom forward for us here in a big way. We'll try and get
well,
back.
Well, Donald Trump.
Here's my question for you, McKay. How does a search for redemption turn into the moment that we've come to now?
Well, it's gone awry, I think, is what happened. I mean, what happened is, Don, I mean, the thing that people don't, I think a lot of people don't quite understand, is that this isn't really Donald Trump riding a kind of wild, unpredictable wave or phenomenon of populist conservative anger. It's actually something that's happened over the last several years is that the old guard Republican establishment has really lost a lot of the power and ability to control the party and their candidates. And what's happened is this entire right-wing counter-establishment that's sort of rooted in the far-right fringe of kind of nativism and xenophobia has become very well-funded, very well-organized, and it incentivizes and amplifies the kinds of things that Donald Trump is saying now. This whole idea about barring Muslims from coming to this country is absurd on its face and rooted in kind of a fever swamp fear in the far right. But what's happened is there's an entire media ecosystem on the far right and pressure groups and money that rewards candidates who say stuff like this. And Donald Trump, I think, you know, could disappear from the stage tomorrow. I don't think he will, but he could disappear. He could vanish tomorrow. And this right-wing apparatus would still be there to raise up another Trump-like figure. And that's the problem the party is grappling with.
What is resonating here? Because when you've got 20-plus percent, sometimes 30% of the electorate in polls, that's not far-right fringe. Or if it is, that's a very big fringe.
It's a very big fringe. Well, and that's, I think, the point that these ideas, the kind of very toxic, you know, anti-Muslim rhetoric that we hear from Donald Trump is rooted in the fringe. But what Trump has done, which is masterful and perhaps frightening, is that he's been able to take that support on the fringe that is rooted in the far right and leverage it to take over, as your previous guest said, 20 or 30% of the party, right? So Trump also, I think, is important in that he's taken these kind of fears of the other, these fears of you know, foreign countries and foreign superpowers and you know, Muslim extremists and immigrant criminals, that was in his announcement speech, and because he's such a savvy marketer, such a masterful showman, he's been able to bring along a lot of the Republican voters with him. And so it's not just that he's tapping into something that exists there. He's actually infecting a good portion of the electorate with these new ideas, these conspiracy theories, these scary images of Muslims and other minorities. And you see it taking – and popularize them. And you see it taking root in a sizable portion of the party.
McKay Coppins has written The Wilderness, Deep Inside the Republican Party's Combative, Contentious, Chaotic Quest to Take Back the White House. Lots of callers for you, McKay. Michael, in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Michael, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Couple things. There's an automobile in town that has a bumper sticker on it that says, "Moderates, rise up." And I would suggest that moderates in Iowa and in Vermont need to rise up and give Donald Trump, who is a bully, that's all he is a bully, give him a thorough drubbing and demonstrate that moderate discourse is viable and that Americans are predominantly very decent people. And we need to demonstrate that to the world.
Moderates, rise up is the bumper sticker. Michael, let me hold on to that. I'll take it to McKay. Let me get a couple more first, if I may. Madison, Wisconsin. Claire, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. What has taken so long for everybody to finally push back against this man? He's been dropping bombshells, Tom, on every ethnic group you can think of for months. And he's feeding people fear. It's turning into hatred. It fits into the gun culture in this country. He's extremely dangerous, Tom.
But that's been right up on stage ever since the first debate where he came out and went after Mexicans immediately. But you didn't see the other Republican candidates going after him. And his poll numbers did great, Claire.
But that's exactly my point. Why are they finally fighting back against him in the Republican Party?
We'll look at that. Why is it taking so long? On the other hand, I mean, maybe they agree with a lot of it. There's been a lot of talk about stopping, reining in immigration. And one more, if I may, John in Claremont, New Hampshire. John, you're on the air.
Yes. I'm a, whatever it's worth, I'm a combat Vietnam vet.
Yes, sir.
As to what Mr. Trump has been saying from the beginning, to me, this is my own personal opinion. I think it is true. America better start waking up. Democrats, Republicans, independents do not want to hear this. But there is a lot of Americans out there who think that he would be the ideal person. As for myself, yes, I would.
John, would you take fellow American citizens who travel abroad and not let them come home because they're Muslim?
Well, my own personal opinion, I'm not going to single out just Muslims.
But
it's all nationalities out there.
Yeah,
they come into our great country. They own this country, or they so think. When I and my service dogs are denied by certain restaurants because they're from another country, no service dogs, no dogs.
Service dogs to help you go in and be the, John, we've got it. I appreciate your call, and we wish you well. McKay Coppins, you got the range right there. Moderates, rise up. Why is it taking so long to see a pushback? And then John saying, America, wake up.
No, I mean, that right there, I think that last caller actually represents a lot of people who are Trump supporters. They want somebody who will fight for them. You call them a bully, but a lot of people feel like at least he's my bully. He's sticking up for me, and that matters.
On Point is sponsored by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses made in America. They're engineered for comfort and long-lasting support with just the right sink, just the right bounce. Two technologies, latex foam and memory foam, come together for better nights and brighter days. It's outrageous comfort at a polite price. Here's the great part. You can try one risk-free for 100 days with free delivery and returns. Go to casper.com/onpoint. That's casper.com/onpoint. And remember to use promo code ONPOINT at checkout to receive a special offer. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the GOP's wild campaign season and the Trump bombshell in the last, what, day? He says he would bar Muslims from entering America. McKay Coppins is with us. Senior political reporter for BuzzFeed joins us from New York. His new book is The Wilderness, Deep Inside the Republican Party's Combative, Contentious, Chaotic Quest to Take Back the White House. You can join us as well. What is the energy, the hunger, the anger that's put Trump and Carson out front for so long? At the end of this wild ride, who do you think will be the GOP nominee? Republicans, we really want to hear from you about what you see going on in your party. It started early, first debate, Donald Trump right out there going straight at Mexican immigrants.
They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
Yeah, maybe. And on, he's gone. Would he approve of waterboarding? Here he was in Columbus, Ohio in November.
Would I approve waterboarding? You bet your ass I'd approve it. You bet your ass.
Bring it on, the idea there. And not only Trump willing to go right out there. Here's Texas Senator Ted Cruz gaining ground against Trump, rising in Iowa polls over the weekend in Iowa. He escalated his rhetoric on foreign policy with a vow to kill Islamic State terrorists.
We will carpet bomb them into oblivion. I don't know if sand can glow in the dark, but we're going to find out.
Okay. McKay, is there a boundary on this, or is this just the soap that sells this year?
Well, I think we're in kind of uncharted terrain here. I mean, no other presidential cycle would a candidate like Donald Trump get away with saying so many things like he said, like in those clips you just played, and suffer zero consequences. And the effect that it's having, I mean, Trump, you could argue, is a unique figure in the sense that he's incredibly famous. He has his own kind of persona that he's crafted over decades in the media. But the real problem that the party faces is the way that it's what it's doing to the other candidates. I mean, you heard Ted Cruz there. Ted Cruz has always been sort of a Tea Party bomb thrower, right? But there's any scenario in which you would imagine Ted Cruz saying something like that. A Supreme Court litigator, a very smart guy, I interviewed him, saying things like that if Trump is not in this race. And I think you could go through all the different candidates and that's the case. They're saying things, they're doing things that never in a million years they would imagine doing in a presidential campaign.
Barbara in Lexington, Kentucky. Barbara, you're on.
Thank you, Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to know, my position is that where all this xenophobia and racism is coming, it's been created by the Republicans. Jeb Bush, Cheney, Lindsey Graham asking, being shocked.
But those people are all condemning Donald Trump today.
They're condemning it, but they're hypocrites. They're politicians, and they're saying things that Donald Trump, they're believing and pushing things that Donald Trump is saying, but they won't say it.
I mean, Jeb Bush called him unhinged. And that doesn't sound like quiet support. Dick Cheney said,
it's not quiet support.
Against everything we stand for and believe in.
Politicians, because that's the only way they can be elected. But Jeb Bush called for only Christians coming into this country. Christians from Syria.
Yeah, that's true. A religious test was there. Robert, thanks for your call. McKay, I mean, is you say they're being pulled to this zone by Donald Trump. Barbara says they sort of, went in and hacked out the trail.
Yeah, well, I think that it's certainly true that there have been strains of this, call it nativism or xenophobia or nationalism, as some Republicans call it, strains of this in the Republican Party and conservative movement for a long time. But I guess you could argue that it's a matter of degree, not type, what we're seeing now. Trump has made it much louder, noisier, higher octane. I still, though, think that there's a difference with the democratized media that we have now, the deregulated political money, it's created almost a sort of Wild West in the Republican Party, which is something I read about in the book, where there's so many There's such an incentive financially, electorally, fame-wise, if that's what you're after, to engage in stuff like this. And you know, we see it in this race, but we've seen it for a few years now where, you know, the louder you get and the noisier you get and the angrier you get, the more you're rewarded in kind of the political right now. And it matters because the GOP establishment that used to be able to rein that sort of stuff in and calm down the kind of ideological tantrums that are thrown no longer has the ability to do that. There's no adult who's able to step in and say, okay, that's enough. And so that's kind of the result we're seeing here. It's the result of years and years of this pattern, or of this trend, and now this is kind of the culmination of it.
We saw the Republican governor of Ohio, John Kasich, almost like swallowing his tongue at the CNBC debate in Boulder, Colorado, right around this, talking about Ben Carson's tax plan and Donald Trump's immigration plans and what he's seeing in the rest of the field, and saying to his fellow Republicans, this can't be the way we go. Here was Kasich.
To talk about we're just going to have a 10% tithe and that's how we're going to fund the government, and we're going to just fix everything with waste, fraud and abuse, or that we're just going to be great, or we're going to ship 10 million Americans or 10 million people out of this country, leaving their children here in this country and dividing families. Folks, we got to wake up. We cannot elect somebody that doesn't know how to do the job.
John Kasich on the edges of the field there. John in Litchfield, Connecticut. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you think?
I know your show's not long enough for... Well, I'm a Republican, but I'm almost sick of having two different parties. You know what? Why don't we all work together and figure this out?
Amen.
Donald Trump, I'm not sure if I would vote for him, but I definitely disagree with what he said about Muslims. But at the other hand, he's bringing things to the forefront that need to be discussed. And it's all interrelated between immigrants, you know, the Syrians, ISIS, gun control. I live in a very small town, and I'm very blessed that nothing much happens around here but everything I see. And I blame the media as well. So something needs to be done. There needs, it's hard not to profile against these people when they're the ones committing the crimes.
So you see a lack of candor elsewhere. But when you say they're the ones committing the crimes, that starts to get awfully broad brush, John. What are you saying? All Mexicans? All Muslims? You know that's not true.
No, it's totally not true. But unfortunately, that's what I said. I blame the media because when I turn the TV on, have my coffee and watch the news, that's what I'm seeing. Another crime in Hartford, another crime in New Haven. And it does have to do with guns. So I'm all for gun control. I own guns myself, have a pistol permit, but everything is so much deeper than this.
John, let me take it right there. McKay Coppins, I mean, look here, we're in a swivet. John owns guns, he's got pistols, but he's for gun control, he's for Trump, but he hates the sort of mess things are in. He wants the candor, but he doesn't want to stereotype, but he sounds like maybe he'd be open to it if that broke the conversation open. Do you see, McKay, a lack of candor about what's been going on, that Donald Trump is legitimately breaking down, or is this just hitting the fear button full on?
Well, I think certainly he's deliberately and very savvily kind of playing to people's fears. But I think to the caller's point, I think what he's expressing is maybe not a factual statement, but a feeling that is genuine, a sort of anxiety that courses through a lot of the conservative movement right now, a lot of people on the right. And this is something that Trump has done very well. Even before politics, remember, Donald Trump's brand that he has carefully cultivated over many, many years was always about being kind of the billionaire for the blue-collar masses, right? He kind of lives an ostentatious lifestyle that the ordinary American thinks that they would live if they were a billionaire.
Yep.
And so now that Trump is in politics and he's a Republican and he's trying to cater to this populist element of the party, he's telling them, and he's sold this narrative, that he's the only one telling the truth, that he knows the shadowy, corrupt elites in the media and in the kind of corporate boardrooms and in Washington. He knows them because he has to deal with them, and he tells them in very blunt and often crass terms that they are taking advantage of the average people, like some of your callers here, and that they're being taken advantage of, and Trump is the only one who will tell them the truth. And that is very, very effective. It also means that no matter how much you and I, Tom, talk about Donald Trump on the radio, or how many headlines are written, or how many fact checks are done in the media, all of it only serves to reinforce his message that he's taking on kind of the corrupt establishment. And so in some sense, we in the media are almost unwittingly advancing or running his campaign for him.
I mean, people complain about that, and I understand the complaint. On the other hand, he is the front runner in this race.
Right. No, I agree.
For the GOP in our democracy.
Right. This is the quandary, right?
Ed in Austin, Texas. We do. And we are. Ed in Austin, Texas. You're on the air, Ed.
Hi. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
My statement is that I think Trump's rhetoric pretty much serves to undermine the values of all United States citizens and plays directly into the hands of ISIS by causing, you know, fear-mongered divisiveness among all of us. You know, so far as vetting Muslims, well, that's another story, but I think that Trump is just out to gain popularity, and for him it's just another business, like in one of his other deals. I really don't see any validity in any of the points he says, except for to gain power. That's about it. He's self-serving. That's all I got.
Ed, I appreciate your call. Listen, I'm willing to listen for valid points, absolutely. But I do want to respond directly to what you're saying there. I mean, there's a wild ride going on. We can kind of have an uproarious conversation about it. But very seriously, on a day like this, my mind is fully with fellow Muslim Americans who have just taken a head-on attack here, kind of unbelievable from a leading political contender, that I, as an American, don't think they should ever have to hear, they should ever have to be subjected to. And I am full of eager anticipation to see how this country responds in full to it. McKay, how do you think the GOP is going to deal with this? Is it going to break up? Is it going to rally behind Donald Trump because he'll look like the guy who might take the White House? Is there someone else you see in the wings who is positioned now to come in and take the mantle after the ramp he's built? Do they have to go down the same road to take that position?
Well, those are all the questions that are being asked, I can tell you for sure, and that are being asked in campaign headquarters and in the Republican National Committee and all over Capitol Hill right now, because Republicans genuinely don't know what to do. The thing is, though, I think the answer to your question is that right now, the Republican Party is so divided into so many different kind of factions and warring tribes that all the candidates will go all different directions. I mean, look, Ted Cruz, you played a clip of him. He's trying to now keep pace with Donald Trump in the kind of bombast department. I report in my book that he led the crusade for the government shutdown in 2013. He's perfectly clear-eyed about what he's doing. I even quote an aide of his who says that they shut down the government, frankly, because the message made for a good hashtag.
And that's just at home. I mean, abroad, you heard that quote. We said, Coppert bombed them into oblivion, talking ISIS. I don't know if sand can glow in the dark, but we're going to find out. I don't know what that means. Is that nuking? You know, that's going big.
Well, and that's what I mean. So Ted Cruz is going to go that direction. I think people like Jeb Bush and John Kasich and to a certain extent Marco Rubio want to go in the other direction. They're trying to rein him back in. Jeb Bush called him unhinged. Marco Rubio said that it was outlandish what he was saying. But the problem is that when you tally up all the support that Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, and Ben Carson get, and then compare that to all the support that the rest of the entire field gets, the Trump camp wins by a long shot right now. It's well over 50%. And so the question is, if Donald Trump flames out tomorrow or next week or next month, do those people return to kind of the mainstream party, or do they end up going, lining up behind Ben Carson or Ted Cruz or some new emergent leader and bomb thrower? I don't know.
We're talking with McKay Coppins about the GOP's wild campaign season. Explain it in terms, if you can, McKay, within the GOP, of demographics or psychographics. Who makes up these different wings, fragments, pieces of the pie?
Right. Well, I think that you know, I report about in the book about how after 2012, the RNC commissioned this kind of small group to perform to basically put together a report on what went wrong in 2012. It became known as the autopsy. And their findings were essentially that the party was, as a lot of your listeners can probably say, too white, too old, too conservative, and you know, basically not diverse enough. And there was a project among some Republicans to widen the tent. But the party, you know, at this point, the actual core base of the party is made up of conservative evangelical Christians, a sort of more moderate business class, pro-business kind of wealthy, affluent donors, the Chamber of Commerce crowd, you might say, and then kind of an activist base, a Tea Party leaning base. And so you have these various factions, and then there's obviously libertarians, and you could identify them in a thousand different ways. But essentially, this coalition that the Republicans have, it was enough voters to get them to 51% for many, many elections. But it's not anymore. It's just not. I mean, just demographically, statistically, it's not enough to win the White House anymore. And so now these various candidates all have their own theories about what the new national coalition is. Marco Rubio argues that he can bring Latinos into the fold. He's a son of immigrants, speaks fluent Spanish. Ted Cruz and Donald Trump are basically making the argument that there are enough conservatives and right-wingers out there that if they just really play to them and rally that base, then that'll be enough to win the election.
McKay, it's December already. We've got a couple of seconds. This is going to the voters. The voters are going to decide. The primaries are coming right up.
Yeah.
It's not about pundits anymore.
That's right. And the voters, I think, need to find out who these people actually are, what they really believe. And that's what I tried to get at in the book. And I think that that's something that they'll find in there.
McKay Coppins. His new book is The Wilderness, Deep Inside the Republican Party's Combative, Contentious, Chaotic Quest to Take Back the White House, senior political reporter for BuzzFeed. And today, on the heels of Trump on banning Muslim entry into the United States, contentious, combative, chaotic sound just about like the right descriptors. Here we go, straight into primary season. McKay Coppins, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. All listeners, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. ¶¶